What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the FN Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. My man, Robin Black. I'm John Ramdeen. Holy cow, it's still busy. The MMA world on fire. Bellator went down on Friday. The UFC happened on Saturday. UFC 192 coming down the pipe. Alexander Gustafsson versus Daniel Cormier for the light heavyweight championship of the world happening at the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas on Saturday, October 3rd, I believe
I think so.
Johnny Hendricks, Texas boy, so taking on...
got a sign right there.
Oh, yeah,
October 3rd. You can't... I don't know if you can see... Oh, yeah, you can see it behind Ramdeen. We got a post.
So Johnny Hendricks taking on Tyron Woodley in a great fight. But we got to reverse. Go back in history from this past... But get the DeLorean. Josh Barnett, man, turning back the clock, so to speak. But not really. It's the experience. It's the time off. Out of action for almost 2 years. Made the necessary adjustments to say, I'm not as young as I once was. I think he burst into the UFC when he was like 21 years old. I think he became, at the time, was the youngest champion in the UFC. And I think John Jones is now the youngest champion. But really a scintillating performance. You know, he understood what Roy... Both guys came in phenomenal shape. They were ready to go 25 minutes. And when you look at the bodies of these guys... In order for them to have the pace that they had for those 25 minutes, they probably have never worked as hard as they have ever worked. And the evidence was what we saw on Saturday.
I always want to talk about the technique and what they did and what happened physically and strategically in it, because I'm really crazy about that stuff. But I also realize that there's other things to talk about. And this one, I thought, Josh Barnett showed us some real life lessons, some things. This is another reason to watch martial arts. The things that you see in combat are lessons, not just in how to beat another man, but in how to live your life. Josh Barnett has gotten better as he's gotten older. At 36, is he 36 37. Or 37?
I think he's 37.
I think he's 37, pretty sure. At 37 years old, he's better than he's ever been. That's how we're all supposed to be in whatever we do. We're supposed to not go, I'm 25, I'm the best blank that I could ever be. You're supposed to continually improve, continually add on to that base of knowledge. I know this much. That means I can learn even more and keep learning. He's done that. And then at 37, he used all of his skills, everything he knew to try to get this guy out of there. Sometimes you can't just get what you want. Mm-hmm. So the guy couldn't be broken. Roy Nelson couldn't be broken. So he outworked him. He outworked him. He wouldn't let up. And that's what was beautiful about this fight to me, is in round four and round five, this guy won't let up. He's going to get what he wants. Yeah. He's going to get what he wants no matter what he has to do. That's beautiful.
What I found beautiful is, you know, you look at... deliberate techniques in whether in any combat sports, guys are moving their head and you see big deliberate movements where it's not necessary. All it takes is just a short movement, economy of movement, and you saw that from Barnett. You don't need big movements, and he was able to get out of the way of many of the big bombs coming aimed at his cranium and was able to adjust and counter Roy Nelson. We also have to be impressed with Roy Nelson because he's evolved as a fighter. We've never seen the top game, the wrestling game, the grappling game of Roy Nelson, despite the fact we all know or we're told that he has a black belt under Enzo Gracie.
And just crucifix.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, well, he just introduced this head kick. Well, it sounds as if he's only been working it for the last couple of weeks, a couple of months. This has been in his toolbox for years and years and years. And you and I have had this conversation before, and I've asked Firas Sahabi about it. Is it important to keep tools hidden in your back pocket so people can't scout them? When you're watching, it's like, well, I don't need to use the head kick here because I'm knocking guys out. But when it's time to use my head kick, use it. Firas's philosophy is, well, if you're like Rory McDonald, just show them everything you have, and they can't process that.
Well, my thinking, there's a lot. This is an interesting topic to me personally. BJ Penn wrote a book saying never kick. He said it in every interview he'd ever done in his life. His book was like, this is about boxing. And what did he do?
Diego Sanchez split his head open.
The cut was bigger than the head. Like, if that's possible, the cut actually extends out into the air. It was crazy. And that's a whole lifetime of not only keeping it, but lying.
Yeah.
Lying to you.
Yeah.
What are we never going to expect that to be? BS. That's never kick. Right. So that is that. The other thing, I truly believe this, is that you want to keep innovating. And if you, whatever it is you do, you want to, you know, you're a tech guy, you talk about fighting, you make, you sew things, whatever it is. The worry, why would I not want to show you something? Well, one, you know what I can do, and two, other people can copy it. But if you show people everything and they copy it, it forces you to innovate. You must keep innovating. You must keep innovating. It elevates the business that you're in. And Conor McGregor, you asked him that too, remember? And he said, I show people everything because it forces – oh, great. You're 2 years behind me. So now you're going to try to catch up. Where do you think I'll be in 2 years? And it'll force him to do that. But the Barnett fight, man, there's beauty in these things, man. There's so much – and it isn't just elegant technique. There's lessons of how to live your life. Roy Nelson – lost that fight. Roy Nelson was getting beat everywhere, and he never gave up. That what? How can you not learn from that?
That can't be taught, though. There's no way, like, really, like, or can it be? You know, we were talking about Mark Hunt and the fact that Mark Hunt, the reason why Mark Hunt is so tough is because he sustained abuse throughout his life, and he learned how to deal with that abuse. Is this the same type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, another Mark H. Hominick used to. Sean Tompkins taught those guys: if you quit in the gym, you'll quit in the fight, and if you quit in the fight, you'll quit in life, etc. You learn to not quit. You might quit after a couple of rounds, and then they explain to you. You learn to not quit. The next time you don't quit. The next time, and you learn, you make it a habit to not quit ever. And by the time most of these guys get to this level, that's mandatory. They have to have it. But I watched those two guys fight for 25 minutes, and you just saw so many inspiring things about how to take on anything in your life. You know, there's that girl you really, really like, and she doesn't like you. Be persistent. Yeah. Like, don't be creepy.
Yeah, but the pain is difficult for people. The rejection is difficult to understand for people. It's like, well, I have to get through that, because if what happens if I ask her out, or if I stand up to this guy and he punches me in the face, and physically speaking, I can't actually handle his punching power, or I can't handle her rejection, or I can't
handle,
you know,
like,
whatever.
Not getting the job, or you know, whatever the thing is. Yeah, it's true. But we can watch these. We can sit back and watch these guys and go, isn't it amazing we can see people that can live like this? Or we can look and go, hey, they're just people. I'm people. Mm-hmm. If they can live like that, I can find a way to live that way. And I know this is all very motivational speakery, and I don't intend to be like that. But I see that. Chris Weidman sat in our presence before he fought Anderson Silva. And when we heard him talk, we had no doubt that guy was going to beat Anderson Silva twice.
I had doubt.
I did.
But I believed his confidence. I'm like, wow, this dude really believes he's going to beat Anderson Silva.
But
like,
he didn't just believe it. He said, I work as hard as I possibly can every single day. Yeah. It's a mantra. He said it all the time. And he lives that way. And he learned, and he never quits. And all of these BS things that you can have a cat hanging on a hang in there, buddy, you know, posters and books and nonsense. They're real. Yeah. And you can learn them from posters and books and nonsense, or you can learn them by watching the greatest people in the world overcome adversity.
One thing I want to talk about, it's something that I've been interested in over the last number of years, because I talk to many fighters, and, you know, I ask about specific strategies and philosophies, like, for example, Lyoto Machida. Well, I'm not saying I spoke to any specific fighter about Lyoto Machida, but you know you have a specific skill set in Lyoto Machida, the karate background, his blitzing, just his interesting attack. And the fighters would say, I'm not concerned with what Lyoto Machida brings to the table. I'm concerned with what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And then I look this past Saturday to Kyoji Horiguchi and Chico Camus. And for the philosophy, if Chico Camus utilized that philosophy, what happens when it's not working for you and you're not as fast as this guy, you can't anticipate his blitzes, his movement is overloading your CPU, and you just can't do the things that you were prepared to do because he's doing his thing?
Well, two things. One, we have Ryan Hall coming up after the break. We didn't mention it off the top because we got too excited to get going, but let's ask him this among other things.
Yeah, cool.
But two, in my opinion, is if you are not better than the other person, the reason you don't concern yourself with what he does, I think part of the philosophy they say that, is so that you work on what you do. When work on it, concentrate on it. If you're being reactive, oh my God, I'm fighting Damian Maia, that means I can't go to the ground. Mm-hmm. Well, if you go to the ground, you're dead. So if you start concerning yourself too much, and we'll ask Ryan about this because people start worrying about his footlock.
Right.
They start worrying about his footlock. But if I can't beat you anyways, if I'm like, screw Ryan and his footlock, I'm going, which is not his only thing, but it's ridiculous. Like, that's not even his best thing.
Yeah.
But I'm going to concern myself with keeping it on the feet, not being taken down. That's a negative. That's not the way to train. I'm going to keep moving and move and stay outside and hit him from distance. Those are all very positive. positive things you're shooting for. Now you're training that instead of training to avoid something or counter something or, oh my God, I'm in trouble. I better do something before he breaks my leg or whatever. And so it's a philosophical thing. But in the end, if you're not good enough to win anyways, it doesn't matter which approach
right,
you took.
Right. But, you know, I think on paper, when you look at, and Chase has just given us the rap sign. Actually, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, as Robin mentioned, we're going to be talking to Ryan Hall, as well as we'll talk about another Hall, Uriah Hall,
yeah,
who got a huge victory at the Saitama Super Arena when Five Rounds Today continues. We are happy to be joined on the line by Ryan Hall, who is competing on this season of The Ultimate Fighter, Ultimate Fighter 22. Ryan, thanks so much for giving us the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys very much for having me on the show.
First thing I want to ask you, Ryan, what happened between 2006 and 2012? You made your professional mixed martial arts debut. You suffered a loss. What happened in the 6 years from that loss to the next time you stepped inside of the cage?
Well, I guess at that time I was competing in jiu-jitsu all over the place, and during the 6 years in between, I found out that my first fight was professional, which was just a little bit of a shock to me, because it was three-minute rounds, no knees, no up kicks, no nothing, all kinds of stuff that, those are the only striking tools that I had, as poorly developed as they were, and basically that was an interesting experience getting back into. So I guess during the time between then and now, I was competing all over the world in jiu-jitsu. I was a blue belt at the time with about a year and year and a half of experience in jiu-jitsu at the time of the first fight. And right after that, I was able to start doing a little bit better in tournaments and kind of put my entire focus to jiu-jitsu.
Hey, Ryan, I think your next fight after that, I fought on the same card as you. It was my last fight, and it was your next fight.
Slam show.
Yeah, in Quebec.
That's right.
I was in the back, and I was concentrating on my fight, but I was pretty sure I heard Faraz remind you that you had agreed not to submit this guy. Is that true? Am I remembering correctly that he told you, don't submit this guy, I want you to get a different experience?
That is correct. You know, Faraz is a very, very good coach, and we always began with the end in mind, you know, obviously with becoming a legitimately good mixed martial arts fighter and someone that, you know, has the experience and the skills necessary to compete at a high level. And getting in there, I think I've seen a lot of my friends and guys that I know and some people that I look up to, you know, with great single sport backgrounds that come in and just absolutely myrtleize, you know, their first couple opponents in MMA, but do so heavily drawing on their experience in that single sport and the edge that they have there. And then by the time that they get into the ring against people that are not playing games, they actually haven't really done a whole lot of striking or a whole lot of wrestling or a whole lot of jiu-jitsu. They haven't actually done the thing that they're not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So Faraz was very, very adamant about me getting the experience in the ring and also in the room, doing the right things that would allow me to be successful in the long run. And so he reminded me in the back, and actually when I single-legged the guy and jumped on his back right away, and I started to put my hand on his neck, and I had remember Faraz yelling at me right in his first minute of the first fight, don't you choke him. You better not choke him. And then I was like, oh, pulled my hands back and started trying to punch him a little bit, and fortunately it worked out.
Well, that is literally the opposite approach to me, where it was just like, win any way at all possible. Like, you know, you don't have the selective abilities to be able to choose how you're going to win. So I find that absolutely fascinating, but it was to a point for a purpose in the long run, right? That you did it that way.
That's correct. You know, that's something that I kind of really started to believe in very much in jiu-jitsu. And every now and then you even suffer a loss in the process, and hopefully that doesn't happen. Obviously, a loss in a professional ring sport is a way bigger deal than losing a jiu-jitsu tournament, just because of the dent that it can put in your record. But, again, you look at, you know, I'll bring him up just because he has a mixed record, not because he's not a fantastic fighter. A guy like Matt Brown, who, you know, again, lost a whole bunch of fights, but clearly, you know, it allowed him that experience, you know, over the course of time, allowed him to find himself as an athlete, find himself as a fighter, and become the devastatingly effective guy that he is today. So, you know, really, as long as you're in it for the long haul, I believe that it makes sense to go and put yourself in those learning situations, even every now and again at the end, at the potential expense of the short term.
Now, obviously, the goal is to be as well-rounded as humanly possible, have no weaknesses when you step inside of the cage. But we know guys like Damian Maya and Jacare, people that have like a jiu-jitsu background or fighters that have a Thai boxing background, want to showcase that specific skill set. Do you have that approach? Are you there to show the world how awesome jiu-jitsu is? Or, like Robin said, you go out to try to get a victory whatever way you can?
I would say, honestly, I'm a little different than either approach. You know, I don't want to just get a victory any way that I can. My goal is to become the best fighter that I can possibly be in a complete martial artist. I don't want to be a jiu-jitsu guy in MMA that, you know, can get a hold of you sometimes. I want to feel comfortable in all situations. That means striking, wrestling, jiu-jitsu. And I recognize that takes time. But at the same time, I'm not here to prove that jiu-jitsu works. I think that anyone that's taking an objective look, you know, realize that jiu-jitsu works, karate works, boxing works, taekwondo works. Everything functions in its own context and at the right time. It doesn't function if you try to force it. So the big thing for me, honestly, is just recognizing the proper, what I believe to be the proper approach for skill development that will eventually, you know, lead us towards the top. And it's really, I don't fight for money. I don't fight for any attention. I just want to be able to become good enough to earn the opportunity to compete against the best guys, because that will make me the best martial artist possible, and that's why we do things the way we do.
Have you learned anything about yourself that you didn't already know with this mixed martial arts journey, or martial arts in general?
Oh, God. I don't know if I have enough time.
Every day.
Yeah, right? It's you know, honestly, the biggest thing that I've learned about myself is that I will never quit. You know, I get beat up sometimes. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. You know, sometimes I fight my best, other times I don't fight as well. I mean, I've fought brilliantly and lost, and, you know, and I've fought like garbage and I've won before and everything in between. And, you know, what I realize is what matters to me is growth in the long run, you know, because if I somehow manage to press a magical button and never be beaten again, but, you know, and everyone thought that I was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I recognized, you know, in my heart of hearts that I wasn't being as, you know, I wasn't growing as much as martial arts. I wasn't growing as much as a person in the process. The pats on the back and the money would mean nothing. You know, all that really matters to me is at the end of the day that I can look back and say that I tried my best and I did it as well as I could. And I haven't always, you know, I've come up short on that before, but I recognize that I'll never quit. And I think that's the thing that I've learned that's most powerful. Technique does not matter. People beat people at the end of the day. I just want to be the type of person who can get it done.
When you look at that and you're prioritizing for your own values and for your own philosophy, a growth mentality, you want to be better every day for the rest of your life. How do you make sure that's so? Like, how do you make sure that that is something that you happen? Is it that happens? Is it the mentality? Is it the steps that you take? How do you do that?
Well, I'll tell you what, if we can get to the bottom of this, I think you and I can write ourselves a book and make a decent amount of money if we can. But I can tell you what I shoot for. Again, I certainly don't have the market corner on how to do this properly, but, you know, I try to play as much as possible and mess around, and I feel like I feel very fortunate to have been able to be influenced by and associated with some of the smartest people that I've ever met in my whole life, and people that are phenomenal in their field, whether it's martial arts, business, thinking, philosophy in general. And, you know, they're focused on the process. They're focused on things that are in their control, and they're focused on getting their mind and their body to work efficiently together. And that's what I'm shooting for, you know, during training. So, you know, as we're training, let's say, for instance, we're working on specific skills, it's not about winning in training. It's even at the end of the day, not about winning in the fight, although it's a lot more about winning in the fight than it is in training. We're always looking as best we can to try to just determine, you know, what are the strings that control the system, what actually allows for growth. Because I watch fights all the time where I think people look like garbage, and they win. I've watched other times where someone looks pretty incredible and it just doesn't go their way. And then sometimes both fighters are incredible, and one just has to win. But focusing, again, on things that are inside of our control and not on specific outcomes has allowed me to be on a much more even keel, I think, growth and development-wise, rather than being subject to the highs and lows of day-to-day, you know, or even fight-to-fight, you know, ups and downs.
Is that self-assessment, or do you have peers and coaches and teammates that you work with that you have this discussion with?
Both.
Oh, my people whose opinions that I trust him. And, you know, obviously I spend a lot of time doing my best to be introspective, but as objective as I might think I am, you know, when it comes to my own issues and my own development or lack thereof sometimes, you know, of course, I'm a little bit of a, you know, jaded view, considering that it's a personal assessment. So, you know, of course, we try to outsource that as much as possible to people with the experience necessary, and I feel very lucky to have some of those people.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are chatting with Ryan Hall, who is on this season of the Ultimate Fighter Reality Show. Don't go anywhere. More Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. We are on the line with Ryan Hall, submission master, mixed martial arts fighter, and from the stuff we've seen, you seem pretty even keel, very, very relaxed for a guy that steps inside of the cage and tries to inflict damage. What is your personal philosophy when it comes to just the art and your path to victory? Because one of the things we've had the chance to do is we've talked to fighters at the highest level, at lower levels, and it seems a trend is I'm not concerned with what my opponent is bringing to the table. I have to focus on what I need to do to be victorious. And I don't know if you saw the fights this past weekend in Japan, but Chico Camus battled Kyoji Horiguchi, who fought Demetrius Johnson. And if Chico Camus had that approach, it was the wrong approach because he didn't get the victory. He wasn't able to match Kyoji Horiguchi in any area. What is your philosophy?
Well, I mean, just because I'd like to say one thing, just because someone doesn't get a victory in this circumstance or that doesn't necessarily mean that their approach is invalid. You know, there's all sorts of things that can go your way or they cannot go your way depending upon the night. And I saw the Horiguchi and Camus fight, and I thought, you know, Kyoji Horiguchi looked great. His movement was very, very good. It was all over the place, and particularly at 125, this guy's bounced around like crazy people, so it's got to be tough to catch him. But, you know, again, only over, like, again, I have a bunch of scientists in my family, or a couple at least, but that doesn't mean I know anything about science. But I will say that you need enough of a baseline in order to really determine, you know, variance from a theme or in order to determine patterns. So, you know, just that's the interesting thing about fighting is that it's a one-off type of scenario. All in team sports, let's say the Yankees play the Red Sox 15, 20 times during a season, 15 times or something like that. One team might win 6 games in a row and then lose 9 in a row, and then we can end up with the season series tied. But if at any point in time we were to stop and just examine 4 games out of the entire sequence, we could say, oh, this team's dominant, that team's dominant, so-and-so will never beat so-and-so. You know, a little tweak here and a little tweak there, particularly in something like the fight game that, you know, has scenarios where you can end the entire sequence and the entire fight all at once. It really just changed the nature of things, and it gets pretty interesting. So I would just say that just because something hasn't worked out in the short term doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to. And when it comes to personal philosophy, you know, fighting, I don't know that I say I have that. I would say that what we're looking for is I want to get people to fight me for the entire time. I don't think that there's many people that are psychologically equipped or technically equipped to doing that. You know, and that is usually the goal. And I want to try to engage on my terms as much as possible and avoid their strengths whenever possible. Even though, again, in the gym, it would be the reverse. I would try to engage on their terms and avoid my strengths when it comes to winning in the moment. You know, of course, you want to push the field of battle to where you're strongest. But I think the one thing that I've noticed is that most people tend to fight in spurts. They need mental breaks. They need, you know, kind of like a refractory period after they try to rip your head off and they come back down. So that's why a lot of times, you know, at lower level fighting, not at higher level, of course, but you kind of get the I go, you go sort of thing. Like I fire my attacks and then you defend and run away and then you fire yours and I defend and run away. But the person to make them deal with you for the entire portion of the fight, you know, that's a significant advantage. And I think you see guys like Conor McGregor, guys like Nick Diaz that are just so, so good at this. And even though, you know, Conor's a little bit, you know, diesel looking than Nick, he doesn't fight like a super athlete. He fights like a very intelligent fighter. Mm-hmm. And I just see something in that I would hope to be able to copy and hope to be able to develop the skills to employ a strategy like that. So that's kind of what we're shooting for.
So if that's the approach, and that's a key approach, one of your winning conditions is get him to keep fighting the entire time. Does that come from, and will that vary opponent to opponent? So that may be a foundational base of how you're going to fight everybody, but you're fighting Nick Diaz or you're fighting John Ramdeen. Are some of the other rules for what you want different?
Oh, absolutely. Really, really good point, Robin. You know, just like certain people, again, have that type of hit you once with their right hand, and you got to be very, very careful about how the next couple seconds of the fight would go. And, you know, let's say, for instance, Connor, pardon, let's say if someone were competing against Connor, you know, of course, they need to control distance, they need to do other things, X, Y, and Z, but try to avoid getting touched with that straight left hand whenever possible, mm-hmm. because that's been known to affect the course of a fight. But win conditions-wise, I think it's a little bit interesting, or at least everyone is unique as an athlete. You know, you're a little bit different than me. I'm a little different than you. Everyone, you know, again, Connor has his own way of fighting. And we all have our different psychological profile, kind of positives and negatives, as well as technical, you know, kind of profile, positives and negatives. But coming from a jiu-jitsu background where I felt that I oftentimes had a bit of a skill edge on certain people, but I didn't wrestle strategically very well at all. And I would run myself into trouble, you know, in matches, kind of feel like people avoided me for the entire match. And it doesn't mean that, of course, they couldn't get on my back and show me or arm lock me too, but just the approach that they would tend to take was to try to skirt around while scoring, you know, when possible, and then stay away when possible.
Yeah, that's what I would do. That's what I would look to do.
It's not a bad idea. If
we were fighting you, I would look to not engage you in your strongest areas. We'd use a lot of lateral movement, try to make you chase, intercept you, and strike you on the way. And that's a logical starting point to try to fight you, I think, rather than, oh, shit, he's got a hold of me. Now what do I do? Let's try to deal with the issue of not letting you get a hold of me, right? That's a logical approach people
absolutely. Oh, no doubt. That was actually something that you discussed on the show, I think it was last week, and I think that's absolutely correct. You know, I would much rather tell someone that they have a great way for me to not get shot than tell me they have the best doctor and they're about to shoot me off. We're always trying to kind of pick the battlefield, and I think that the fighters that are best able to do that and play to their strengths, and, you know, both from a, you know, tactical perspective and a technical one, like you said, have a very significant edge. And so many times we look at a one-off thing like a fight, and the battlefield was chosen by the winner. And as a result, he or she won. If the battlefield were switched, a lot of times the fight would go very, very differently. And I think that's just something that we as fight fans or as fight kind of breakdowner guys have to keep in mind.
Ryan, last thing I want to ask you, the Ultimate Fighter reality show, are you having a good time? And would you do this thing again if you had the chance?
Well, I've honestly only watched one episode of the Ultimate Fighter. You know, it's just been pretty busy.
Spoiler alert, you won.
Watch,
spoiler alert, you won. You won.
I cannot speak on this, but basically, I would absolutely do it again. I would absolutely do it again. You know, honestly, it was something that I heard a lot of people, oh, it was terrible. I will say not having any music for 6 weeks was definitely the worst part of it. I found myself, I was writing down song lyrics in a notebook and humming them to myself just to have something to do. But at the end of the day, you know, honestly, it's been a great experience. I feel very fortunate for the opportunity to get on the show, and I had a foot and a half out of the door for MMA and martial arts. I was about to call it quits and go do something else in my life. And Ultimate Fighter, you know that people will be there. You know your opposition is going to be tougher. And particularly on this season, I think that there were a lot of really good athletes that they put on the show on both sides. So I was very, very excited to be able to compete there because you want to, you know how it is, Robin. Like, as an athlete, you want to get in there and fight against people that are going to help you be better. You want to fight against people that everyone thinks are good so that you can learn and so that you can progress. And finally having the opportunity to do that was fantastic, and that was not something I would have otherwise been able to do. So I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Ryan, we want to thank you so much for your time. We want to wish you all the best in your mixed martial arts endeavors as well as on the reality show, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
When we come back, we are talking about more in the landscape of mixed martial arts. Don't go anywhere. More Five Rounds Today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Interesting shit with Ryan Hall. I almost said Uriah Hall. And what a great segue. We'll talk about Uriah Hall.
Right, of course,
the co-featured bout of UFC Fight Night, Barnett and Big Country Roy Nelson, was Gegard Mousasi and Uriah Hall. And I think, you know, that the odds makers had it such a crazy difference that Gegard Mousasi was such a favorite going into this fight. And you can understand why. He's faced better competition. He seemed to be the more complete mixed martial artist. His experience against higher level of competition. And then you see how that first round transpires. He catches the kick, easily puts Hall down to the ground, and just slowly works his top game where he's absolutely pounding, advancing his position. Uriah Hall managed to get back to, was defensive, I think threatened to heel hook briefly, but Mousasi was in full control. Did he get overconfident? Because at the start of round two, Uriah Hall did what he does, uses his stand-up background, his traditional martial arts background, whether it's karate or taekwondo, and spinning kick to the face of Mousasi, who was hurt. And then as soon as he saw that he was on skates, he closed out the show.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
It was awesome.
It really was awesome. Yeah. And as much as it's awesome to see a guy jump and spin and knock a guy out, or then fly knee, and actually, Mousasi survived both of those some crazy way. Rockhold survived that spinning kick to the temple from juiced up Vitor, too. I mean, that was amazing. But what was amazing to me, when you think about it, we would look. So you're back in the corner. You're 95% of corner guys. And you go back after the first round. You're talking to Uriah Hall. We need you to circle. We need you to be precise with your strikes. Let's not throw anything crazy. Let's work. We're not in a rush. We're going to slowly pick this guy apart. Don't get in. Don't let him get a hold of you. It'd be a lot of what not to do. And among those things not to do is a jumping spinning kick. And he did it. And he did it freely. And he did it with confidence. And he went out. Because when he does that, he knocks guys out. He's amazing. He's got amazing talent. The issue that – and I mean he
– But not guys the likes of Gegard Mousasi.
But he has the skill to do it.
Yeah.
And if he hesitates, if he doubts it, if he's half in instead of 100% in on that spinning kick, he's on his back.
Yeah.
Which is why most people would never throw it, and why Uriah Hall, who had the less than free performances, wouldn't have thrown it. But this Uriah Hall, he said – I want to take the toughest fight I've ever taken on short notice against the best guy I've ever faced by 100, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to be free and I'm going to knock him out. That's what he did.
But
it's amazing.
Is there an out there? Is it's like, I'm stepping up to face a top-ranked guy on short notice. If I lose, nobody cares.
Yes, except for I don't think he took that.
Yeah, right.
I don't think that is true. But the only thing that's true is what's true for you. The only thing that matters is your perspective. You make the perfect point that illustrates this. It's like, well, I'll take him. It'll be the toughest fight ever, so I got nothing to lose. You always have something to lose. And if he approached it with nothing to lose, well, it doesn't matter if I lose, he'd lose. If he approached it with, well, I better not throw something crazy because he'll take me down, he'll lose. The only way he's going to win that fight was being all in. He said he was all in. Mm-hmm. He talked like he was all in. Some evidence has suggested that he's not always all in. And that's what we went on. Some people just like, oh, he sucks.
He's terrible. Yeah, no.
And we tried to go in and look at it with all of the evidence. But what the evidence we were missing was his belief.
Mm-hmm.
His true, honest belief that he was going to win that fight was the biggest and most important thing about it.
Did it have to be a perfect storm, that belief, on top of the fact that Mousasi, did he get overconfident? It's like, oh, you know, I'm going to beat the shit out of this guy in the first round. I'll do the same in the second. And just not anticipate the fact that this guy is ridiculously dangerous and has this lifetime of martial arts. How many times has he done that spinning kick to pads or whatever? And obviously he knows the distance. Let's do it.
They said, and I was just told this morning when we were talking about this, that they had studied tape. So it wasn't just, I'm going to do what I do. They'd also studied tape that when you throw spinning attacks, he ducks down. So he threw it to the sternum.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, that's awesome. That's like, you know, because there was something at play there. I watched it, and I'm looking for the truth, and I break things down with all of the evidence and information that you have. And what information I had when I watched that was something's going on there. I thought he might have just been free enough that when he just saw, you know, a hesitant body movement, or that he did it in such a way. But if it was done that way, based on tape study, and based on research, and based on preparation, then it's all the more awesome. And I have no reason to doubt him. I mean, he's been a pretty honest cat throughout this. So that was a definitive performance that'll be the – that if he never fought again, would be something he should be proud of for the rest of his life, but I do believe he'll build on it.
Well, there's huge expectations. You know, he was hyped in the reality show, lost to Kelvin Gastelum, and as Pollock pointed out, we all know how good Kelvin Gastelum is.
He's very good.
And then on top of that, there's still all these expectations because you have all these flashy knockouts, and then there's no expectations with this Musasi fight. There's no way. The odds makers had him, the underdog, so on and so forth. He comes out and destroys Musasi the way he did in round two. Now there's more expectations for him.
Sure.
So it's there's no this. Yeah. It's you're climbing up the food up the ranks to the top of the food chain.
And you know my belief is how mentality and the psychology and the mind. We've heard it 100 million times. That might be a slight exaggeration. We've heard a lot of times that it's 90% mental.
Yeah,
because if it is, this guy's physical is perfect, and if he fights with the knowledge, fights the way Chris Weidman fights, who beat him incidentally back in the development
ring
levels.
Combat.
What did he learn from that? What has he learned from study and from, you know, I don't know that anybody has asked him this. I haven't seen it, but it's certainly a question to ask him. Are you working with a sports psychiatrist? Are you working with a mental coach? Are you working with, because something's changing.
Well, that's becoming the norm, right? We're seeing that. Back in the day, say you're a wrestler, it's like, okay, well, I got to learn this jiu stuff. Bring in a jiu-jitsu coach. Then bring in a kickboxing coach. And now it's like, okay, how come we're still not having the success we need? Oh, we need all these other things that can help us, being a life coach or a psychologist or whatever, to ensure success. Because you need, as you pointed out, winning conditions. How do I create these winning conditions?
Well, you're the one in it. So when we watch from the outside, we will look, oh, there's nothing to lose. Your consciousness, your body, you know, years of your life. There's
Lose. Sean Tompkins said to his guys, okay, so you get knocked out.
Yeah.
You wake up and you go on to live another day.
And more importantly, is that something that you can control? Being knocked out. Well, if I fight hard. Okay, how do you fight hard the best? Well, I go out and go after it. So that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. If you're trying not to get knocked out, if you're trying to prevent a negative, that is extremely hard. It's really challenging. It's brutal. If you're trying to create a result that isn't a negative, you're better off. So I will not worry about getting knocked out. The best way to not worry about it is go after you. Do my thing. And I think that's at the root of what we were talking about earlier, that idea of don't worry what he's going to do, worry what you're going to do. I don't think it's as cut and dry as the way they say it. I think as a primary motivation to go in with the knowledge that you will be – I'll get rid of what you want to do best by pushing it my way. And like Ryan said, where the fight happens, the arena that the fight takes place, and you try to control that.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're looking ahead to UFC 192. It goes down this weekend in Houston, Texas. When we come back, it's 5 Rounds Today. Welcome back to 5 Rounds Today. UFC 192 coming up on October 3rd at the, Toyota Center? Toyota Center in Houston, Texas.
Some form of vehicle.
Main event, 205-pound championship of the world on the line. Daniel Cormier, Alexander Gustafsson. Are we going to call it a number one contenders fight with Tyron Woodley and Johnny Hendricks? If it isn't, it damn well should be. As well as the returning Rashad Evans and Ryan Bader. Those fights enough.
That's great.
I'm paying for pay-per-view. Yeah. But then you look underneath. You have Juliana Pena taking on Jessica Ai. Magomedov taking on Sean Jordan.
I like that Sean Jordan.
Yeah, me too.
Those backflips. He's like 900 pounds.
Exactly. It's crazy. Joseph Benavidez and Ali Bagatinov.
I like Benavidez.
Sergio Pettis versus Chris Carriasso. That's pretty crazy.
Didn't we call Sergio's first fight?
We did. First fight. However, we were supposed to call it, but I think
they screwed up the production. So we were there.
We were there, but nothing worked.
When we watch fights, we just commentate them. That's just what we do. And we didn't have a mic that worked, so we did it after. But.
Another cool fight that I think nobody's talking about, Alan Jobang, 12-3, taking on Albert Tumanov, who I think this is a kid that you need to look out for. 15-2. I think he's 24 years old. 23 or 24. Could be even younger than that. Yeah, 23 years old and 10 knockouts. Yeah. He's fun to watch, and I think that he is going
to... Joban's fun to watch,
yeah, he is,
too,
he
man.
Yeah, he is, but... his last fight, Joban, was against Matt Dwyer,
yeah.
And Matt Dwyer got knocked out by Albert Tumanoff in a minute. I know, so yeah, I get math. It. No, exactly. We're trying to be exactly. This is what I like. I like the fact that this is kind of the developmental league, even though it's in the highest level.
Yeah, and the upside is that you get fights this good mid card now. The downside,
however, that
is,
could be a main event on low, like not.
Like
I don't even
or,
yeah, something
or,
like that. It
FS1
could be. It really
sure.
could be
on one of these sort of. It is based on skill and progression and how far they
not
may
handsomeness because Alan Joban is he's handsome
for sure. Him and Elias Theodoro, who's got better hair?
Elias would be mad if he heard you compare him.
He'll be all right. He'll get over it. But he's maybe okay. Fine, he's more handsome. It's true. Then you've got a debuting kid who's 5-0 in the first fight.
Sage Northcutt.
Yeah, yeah. So karate dude.
Yeah, you've seen this thing with Dana White. So it was him and Nick the Tooth. And I didn't see before that, but they're looking at somebody for Nick the Tooth to fight. And they had all these posters and whatever. And this Sage Northcutt, he looked like a bodybuilder. He was orange. Yeah. He was at a bodybuilding competition. It's
orange.
Like, let's get this guy.
Yeah.
Because clearly he doesn't know. Sure, he has a 3-0 record, but
he's a karate guy.
And then you see him and suddenly he's not just a karate guy.
He submitted some dudes.
So
young.
This was really judging a book by its cover. And, you know, I think that he's 5-0 right now. Keep an eye on him.
He's
fun to watch. He's good looking. There's kind of a story there.
How does he do? Does he walk out on the first fight of the night like, of course, I'm here. There's nowhere else I'm supposed to be. That's how Conor McGregor, when he went to the UFC, he was like, and I spoke, David Mullins is very close with his team, and he said, you know, they weren't like, let's go apply to the UFC. Let's see if the UFC will take him.
We're going to take over.
Yeah, he said he's going to go out and keep getting better and better and better until there's nowhere else that it's logical he should be. Is this guy walking out like that? Like, hey, man, of course I'm here.
Yeah.
You wait till you see what I'm going to do. And can he do it? He's facing a guy who had one of the worst performances I've ever seen in the UFC from the Ultimate Fighter Latin America, Trevino. He did not look good. I think he was 15-0 or something on the local circuit in South America.
12-1.
12-0 on the local circuit. And then he really had, and I'm not one to be able to say that, but it wasn't. He didn't look like he necessarily was the right guy there. So this is a perfect opportunity. A guy with a good record who earned his way there for real, but a guy who hasn't looked good in the UFC yet. The kid can come in here. What kind of name is that? Is that a porn star? Is that
a
Hollywood? Yeah, it's a great name.
And good hair. And the fact
orange.
Is, he had an amateur record as well. So he had 5 wins, 1 loss as an amateur.
Good hair. Good. He's had a loss.
And he's had a loss.
That's good.
And then on top of that, he went and fought for Legacy. And they know what they're doing. They're constantly looking for better talent, entertaining fighters. And,
great way to start a
and
show.
And it really is a great way to start a show. And at least there's some interest. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have the first fighter of the night where people are starting to pay attention, whether that's the hardcore fans, you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere.
And then you go from there. And eventually, because I was one of those guys, I watched Daniel Cormier. I watched him make his mixed martial arts debut fighting for, I watched him in Strikeforce Challengers. And I think we aired the King of the Cage fight where he won the title. But I had a feeling that he was going to be some guy to watch out for. And now he's the 205-pound champion of the world. Will he stay the 205-pound champion after Saturday?
Well, we'll find out because he's brilliant. He's awesome. He's super talented. He's hardworking. He's got all the things you're supposed to have. But you don't want to be sitting there kind of thinking that your opponent doesn't have all those things. I don't know that he's necessarily thinking that. But you got a guy, a Swedish guy who's quiet, who's coming off a bad loss, which probably highly motivated him. You know, you're on top of the world. You almost take the title. You have a bad loss in a stadium in front of all those people. Mm-hmm. What did that do? Did you go back and just quietly say the only proof, the only thing that matters now is being great? Because he hasn't been talking. He hasn't been doing any of that stuff. He's literally somewhere in a lab right now cooking up skills. And that's if... Do not be surprised if this isn't the way that Daniel Cormier is writing it in advance.
Yeah, of course. You know? When we come back, we'll continue to discuss more of UFC 192 when 5 Rounds Today continues. Thanks for joining us here in our FN studios. This is Five Rounds Today. He's Robin Black. I'm John Ramdeen. UFC 192 going down this weekend in Texas. The main event, Daniel Cormier and Alexander Gustafsson. You're so excited. You almost knocked the freaking
It's all the
microphone
caffeine
down
in my
here.
Joe Rogan mug.
Tyron Woodley and Johnny Hendricks. You believe that Johnny Hendricks has, I'm not going to say limited skills, but
that's not
the right word. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ, what are you talking about? I'm not saying that.
There is a possible belief. I have a belief that he's possibly maxed out.
Right.
We have seen the best of him.
Right, okay. And that Tyron Woodley, we haven't. That he's going to continue to grow, that he's acquiring skills that we haven't yet seen inside of the cage. Are we going to get to see them on Saturday? And is Johnny Hendricks' best way to deal with that to just smash through them?
Yeah, yeah. And even if it's true, even if Tyron Woodley is more complex, Hendricks has the ability to smash through them. He also, it's just a weird feeling. It's a feeling based on the way he presents itself, some of the way he talks about fights and those kinds of things. It's great to believe you're the best in the world. He is the champion.
Yeah.
He's a 170-pound champion, welterweight champion of the world. A lot of people think he beat the best guy of all time.
He didn't. No.
I gave George rounds 1, 3, and 5.
Whatever it was.
One and five and whatever the one in the middle was. But there's an argument, and that's for damn sure, that he took round one. If so, he won. And by the end, he's the guy winning the fight.
Sure.
So even if he lost that on points, hey, give us another round. I'll finish this French guy. You know, so there's plenty to give him from that fight, regardless of what you want to who you want to give it to. But I feel like he has compiled it and he is what he's going to be, which is pretty damn badass. I feel like Tyron Woodley, and Tyron feels this way too, is that he's still nowhere near his potential. And that's an exciting place for a guy like Woodley. Now, I could be totally wrong about Hendricks. Hendricks could be like, wow, there's stupid people that talk about the sport, and there's lots of them, lots of us. We're not those guys. But and he's like, I'm just so much better than I was in my last fight. That may be so. So you don't know. You get some of these messages from a number of things, but we look for patterns and we look for explanations and things. Sometimes they aren't there.
What do you expect from Rashad Evans and Ryan Bader? Rashad's my man because I look back at the time in The Ultimate Fighter. He was just a one-dimensional wrestler, and we've seen the trends. Some guys just never evolved. He was not one of these guys. Mm-hmm. He's constantly evolving, and now as an older fighter working with an awesome team in Boca Raton, Florida, what do you expect from the former champion?
Well, that's why I really want to watch him fight. I'm a fan, too. And, my question is, has he kept getting better with all this time off? One, you just shown there's evidence of that. From day one, he got better.
Yeah.
So there's lots of evidence of that. And two, on Five Rounds, you mentioned that Barnett,
Frank Mir.
Arlovsky, Mir, older guys have progressed a lot lately. So it's very doable. He's done it. Guys his age are doing it, so it's certainly in it, and I can't wait to see.
All the action goes down this Saturday in Texas. That is it for us. Next week, all the fallout from UFC 192. On behalf of Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdeen. We'll see you guys next week.